Hey there, my name's Jared Holt, and welcome to Shitpost. This is a podcast at the intersection of tech, politics, and culture. Every other week, I bring on someone who I think is doing interesting work or has an interesting perspective on current events. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on the player of your choice and check out the newsletter. There's a link to that in the description. Before we get started this week, just a little bit of housekeeping here at Shitpost. The podcast and the newsletter, we're taking a couple weeks off here right after this episode, but we'll be back at the end of April with some fresh new content. I just need a break. Joining the show this week, I have a friend of the show, Kelly Weil. She's a reporter at the Daily Beast. She's been on the show before. She covers all kinds of conspiratorial and bizarre stuff, and she's got a new book out. It's called Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. She's been on the show before to talk about Flat Earth theory specifically, and I thought with the release of the book, it would be a great time to check back in. So first off, Kelly, thanks for joining the show, and how are you doing?
Thanks so much for having me. It's always good to be in the shitpost zone.
Yeah, I don't remember if the world had completely ground to a halt last time I had you on or not. But it's been a while. It's been too long, and I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, I think there was definitely like a bastion of sanity last time. So, you know, we're just fully out there now, and it's exciting to be here.
Yeah, so can I get a vibe check on the state of the flat earth movement? When we talked last time, I think that, you know, the flat earth movement was kind of starting to get almost a little bit of a moment in the sun, if that is the way to word it. I'm being very cautious of any kind of planetary puns here. But it seems like since we talked about it, it's really gotten some attention, kind of got some life and some eyeballs on it that it maybe wasn't used to before. And I guess, how's it doing today? You know, the day of our Lord and Savior, April 12th, 2022.
You know, it is in a weird place right now, like a lot of conspiracy movements, I think. A few years ago, when I started following Flat Earth, I thought it was a little bit more siloed, a little more self-contained than it is now. You know, you'd go to like a Flat Earth Facebook page and they'd mostly be on topic. One thing I've noticed over the past couple years with this and with other conspiracy theories is that they are all just merging into this unholy mess, right? If Flat Earth Facebook page is sharing anti-vax stuff and, you know, roughly 50%, maybe not that many, but of the like Stop the Steal and anti-vax telegrams, the men are posting Flat Earth content. So, you know, it's a real crossover event, very ambitious.
You wrote this book. It's come out now. You dug into flat earthers even more. And I was kind of flipping through the opening of it, and you start mentioning that you're texting this guy named Mike Hughes, who unfortunately is no longer alive, but kind of made it, I guess, part of his life mission there towards the end to launch himself in a rocket to prove the earth is flat. And you're just texting with this guy, like, while cooking an omelet on the stove, if I remember correctly. I guess the first question is, what made you want to go even deeper into the topic of flat earth at the time that you did?
So flat earth was super interesting to me because it was really evidence that people could believe anything they put their minds to. You know, it's one thing to be, say, an anti-vaxxer, which is equally evidence-free, but it's a little narrower, it's a little bit more believable, whereas flat earth requires you to cast out all available evidence and really start fresh. So I was interested in this community just from that almost academic standpoint. And then I think around the time I last talked to you about this, I'd been to this flat earth conference, couple day long conference in Colorado, and I filed the story. I trimmed it down to like 2,000 words, and I'm like, yo, I have about 50,000 more words and 100,000 more questions. So in a certain way, it's like, I was just curious, right? And you ask enough questions and it turns into a book proposal. So I've stuck it out with them for like 4 or 5 years now.
Oh, wow. So what have you learned along the way? I understand the book. You get into some of the history of flat earth theory, right? Maybe we can start there. What's the genesis point for this? Because I think most people hear of, you know, this idea that the earth is flat in a, you know, maybe a science class in fourth and fifth grade, and it's, you know, framed as, can you believe people used to think this, but people believe it today? Where did this come from and kind of how has this evolved to our modern day?
Totally. So, you know, it's funny because a lot of our conception of how old-timey people thought about the Earth's shape is actually kind of wrong. It doesn't give our ancestors enough credit there. You know, we have known that we lived in a globe for more than 2,000 years. It's something that Greek mathematicians could figure out with relative ease, Egyptians. You know, you can figure these things out based on observing events at the horizon, doing pretty simple tests with shadows. So this isn't a new revelation. Flat Earth theory actually came about in its current incarnation in the 1800s. You know, this was long after the globe was established science, but we had an English eccentric, shall we say, in generous terms, named Samuel Rowbotham, who had a storied career before him. He led a failed utopian commune. He had he tried selling like fake miracle cures, real Alex Jones vibes from this guy.
That used to just be real guy shit, you know? That used to be what dudes did.
Yeah, man, why don't the weak men of today just start a failed commune with their buddies and try and live forever by drinking soda water, which is what this guy did.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I drink so much of the La Croix stuff.
Oh, you are right on the money. Yeah, actually, this guy's thing was more like a Dr. Pepper, but like as long as it was carbonated, that was the good shit for him.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, the bubbles are key. So you're saying I might be onto something.
Yeah, this guy theorized that the bubbles would, like, keep your limbs from calcifying, which he thought was what made everyone die. So, you know, you're keeping spry. And yeah, if you're on the Rowbotham theory of medicine, you're set for life.
All right. Back to the earth. It's flat.
Yeah, so that's the conclusion this guy came to when I think some of his soda water salesman stuff was drying up, so to speak. And he conducted a series of experiments on the territory where he previously had this commune. And he said that based on his measurements, Earth looked flat. Now, we don't know if he was like just genuinely doing the experiments badly and tricking himself, or if he was outright lying. But he started making a name for himself as this flat earth theorist. And he came out with books about this. He had a lecture circuit. And people were really converting to this theory. They were throwing money at him. And it became his life's work, honestly.
Wow. So then, I guess, where did it go from there? Because people are still believing it today, right?
Right. And very much just a version of what Samuel Rowbotham was proposing in the 1840s. You know, there have been slight tweaks to the theory, but it stayed fairly consistent in its core claims. So after Rowbotham died, he had like a carriage accident. It was like this real, I don't mean to make light of anyone's death, but he's been dead a long time. Just like a real like slapstick thing where he fell out of a carriage and died in a really obscure accident. But the theory had some ups and downs. It has always kind of thrived in like insular weird movements. Hmm. So it had a resurgence in the early 1900s in the US in Illinois, where there was this borderline cultic religious town where this fundamentalist church had control over all the laws and all the land. And unfortunately, the preacher at the head of the church became a flat earther and implemented it in the schools and in the city code and use it to rule with an iron fist, really.
Whoa.
Yeah. genuinely like a flat earth dictator. Weird and maybe rightly forgotten chapter in Illinois' history.
What ended up happening to that guy?
Well, he said that he would live forever. Not forever. No, live to the age of 120 because he had a diet of nothing but Brazil nuts and buttermilk.
Okay, I was about to say, would you believe it? If the soda water came back up again, I was going to lose it. But
no, oh man, that would have been such a good running bit. No, this guy was he was really on the alliterative diet. But he so he said that would make him live to just incredible age. But as we might expect from someone with a very restrictive diet like that, he started getting a whole bunch of medical issues in his 60s, and that kind of it shook people's faith in him. So after a couple decades of flat earth theocracy, he finally lost his position of power and passed away. And people don't talk about him much anymore for, I think, good reason.
Yeah, yeah. So bringing it into today, you know, you mentioned this also in the intro of your book, but I think we also talked a little bit about this last time you and I spoke about flat earth conspiracy theories on this show. Which is this assertion that a lot of people have misconceptions about the flat earth community, if you will. Which is community the right word there, Kelly?
Yeah, I think so. They very much view themselves as, you know, a cohesive group, kind of like a religious movement in some ways. It's their friends. It's often their livelihood. Yeah, community's right.
So I guess, what did you mean by that? And I'm curious, you know, what your insights into that might be now that you've spent all this time reporting out, you know, talking to folks, doing research for this book, of how you think people that believe in flat earth theories are misunderstood. Because I think a lot of people, myself included, probably more than I would like to admit, view it as almost like a spectacle. It's almost kind of hard to believe somebody would think that the earth is flat in this day and age. But it's like, to the people that believe it, it's not really a sideshow. It's the truth to them, right? So I guess I'm curious how you think people who believe in flat earth theories may be misunderstood by the rest of us. Us globers. Globalists? Are we globalists if we think the earth is flat?
I think I've heard them call us globalists, but like, I don't think they actually know what that term means.
Circular globe heads. Circular people.
In the book, I just say globe earthers for consistency.
Okay. But,
you know, that take you had on them is really understandable. And it's one that I certainly had at the outset. And I think sometimes I still fall into because, I mean, flat earth is, it's so weird, it's almost funny, right? It is funny sometimes. But I think the misconception about flat earth, and frankly about a lot of conspiracy theories, is that the people who believe in something this absurd must be really dumb. You know, they must have something wrong with them to believe this. And that's not actually usually the case. You know, people can be intellectually smart and still believe things that are wildly off base. And one thing that I wanted to get into in this book was examining our innate human susceptibility to conspiracy theories, because it is something that we are all, you know, vulnerable to in a certain way. Maybe we're not all flat earthers, but in moments of confusion, when we're feeling frightened, when we don't have enough evidence or we don't want to accept the situation in front of us, it's very natural to turn to alternate explanations. And I think everyone's done that to a certain degree. It's also, you know, the term conspiracy theory does not negate the fact that there are actual conspiracies.
And, right.
You know, before they're proven they are theories. But with that in mind, the more I talked to flat earthers and the more I dug into the scientific literature around conspiracy belief, it really occurred to me that these were people for whom a very common and natural human thought process was just going, you know, like a step too far. So people could be honestly quite, you know, reasonably intelligent, or not come off as wingnuts in conversation, be very kind, be someone I could even want to get a beer with. And yet we don't agree on the most fundamental aspects of the planet we live on. So that was really interesting to me, finding that kinship and then kind of realizing kind of the uncomfortable dissimilarities there.
Yeah, that makes sense to me because, you know, you've been to Flat Earth conferences and, you know, I don't know if you've ever tried to put together a major event. I'm trying to help put together my wedding right now. And you can't be stupid and pull it off, right? Like, these aren't people that are just like falling out of bed every morning and tripping over their shoelaces all the time. These are folks that, you know, as you said, I think, you know, took a wrong turn somewhere and very smartly wound up at the wrong conclusion. So you kind of started to get to it, but your book is about Flat Earth, but it's also not just about Flat Earth. And it kind of gets to the question that you started to touch on there for a bit that I think is maybe more important, which is what it takes for somebody to believe something that is incredibly untrue. And I think a lot of listeners can probably relate to this in some form or another in their life. They look around them and they wonder how people could possibly arrive at the beliefs that they have. Sometimes it's, you know, some political disagreement. Oh, how could you think that? Sometimes it's the cousin who got like really into QAnon over the summer. And I'm curious to hear what you learned while you were writing this book about how people get drawn into that kind of stuff. Like kind of how we should think about that. Because I guess my take, Or the way that I've kind of thought about it is I see people kind of get lost in it. But I imagine it's probably a lot more nuanced and complex than that.
Yeah, there's a few ways, a few primary ways people get drawn into conspiracy theories. I would say that the unifying element that there's motivated reasoning in play. There's a reason that someone doesn't want to believe in established reality. But branching off of that, there are a few reasons that people might turn to conspiracy theories as an alternative. You know, one is simply that often conspiracy theories make sense of information when there's a void of it. And one example that, you know, became very evident to me as I was finishing this book early on in the pandemic was I'm in all these parenting groups, right, on Facebook, and it's relatively sane, normal people, but early on when there was no information about what the virus meant for little kids, you know, how you could keep your family safe, people were posting wild conspiracy shit because that was just all that was there. They wanted something to fill the void, and well, there certainly wasn't a useful CDC statement, so they just went with anything. Having some sense of being informed was better than feeling completely uninformed. Another reason people will turn to conspiracy theories is because they don't want to accept a reality presented to them. And we see this all the time with Trump fans, right? They really struggle with the idea that their candidate lost. It's a painful reality to them. It was part of their identity even to be a Trump supporter and to be proud and to be victorious, right? In elections. So clinging to this alternate theory that he really did win and that there was a great conspiracy to oppress them is in its own weird way comforting. And I think that ties into what we might think of as the third and final draw, which is that people often look to conspiracy theories as a way of feeling better about a group that they identify with. You know, if you are a Trump supporter, watching him lose an election is sort of a blow to your identity.
Yeah, it sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so they want to feel better about the group they're in, either by believing an alternate story about them or even by believing that people are actively working to keep them down. Having kind of a victim mindset and feeling like they're on a hero's journey to overturn that, I think is really comforting and satisfying to some people.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that last point, the victim narrative, because I think that's an observation. It's certainly one that I make a lot, and certainly one I see other people make a lot, that you know, Trump supporters or conservatives in general have, you know, this perpetual victim narrative in the media that they consume. But I hadn't thought of that as a comfort, but I could definitely see how it would work that way.
Totally. I mean, it's like it's better to believe that people are working against you and that that is the cause of your misery rather than that, I'm sorry, like, you're not that important and bad things just happen.
Yeah. It's easy. Yeah. To make it external rather than just, I feel like shit today. Right. So I want to bring up Mike Hughes as an example. He's the guy that I mentioned at the beginning, the rocket guy. He was, you know, building these rockets, trying to shoot himself into the air so he could prove to the world the Earth was flat. And, you know, ultimately, that's what killed him. And I was curious if you had any thoughts about what kept somebody like Mike going. As people would come and talk to him, film him, you know, people would make fun of him. He just kept going. And despite all of his failures, despite all of his tribulations, he maintained his beliefs, because I think that's another maybe element of this. There's certainly the aspects that bring people into these false realities, but then I think there's also an element of something that keeps them there and holds them tight, even in the face of all kinds of evidence or experience to the contrary. So, you know, I'm curious, maybe using Mike as an example here to talk about this more broadly, sort of what keeps people in the flat earth movement? Because I can't imagine that if you're walking around telling the world that you think the earth is flat, that you're going to go very long before somebody tries to prove you wrong.
That's exactly right. You know, for Mike, and I think for a lot of conspiracy theorists, there's an element of some great quest, some great search in their conspiracy belief. So, I mean, Mike is such a good example of how people can be quite smart and, you know, be into a very weird conspiracy theory. He was an amateur rocket stuntman. Yeah, he had some bad launches and one killed him. But I mean, you've got to be pretty damn good to build that rocket and land it safely in the first place, yeah. Which he did multiple times.
Yeah, I bet that guy's smarter than me. I don't think I could build a rocket.
Oh, hell no. I like you, barely.
Give me 20 years. I don't think I could get that off the ground.
Yeah, for the best. I think we don't need any more amateur rocket stuntmen in my lifetime. But no, with Mike, I mean, he had this quest, right? He was going to build this rocket. He was going to do this thing that no one had done before. And he was, you know, keeping track of records when he was doing these practice launches. It was a mission for him, and he was very, very passionate about it. And I think that's true also of conspiracy theorists with somewhat less ambitious goals. I hang out in a lot of QAnon Telegram groups, you know, just lurking and poisoning my brain. And for so many people, it works as a kind of puzzle for them. They're looking for the next clue. And I suspect there's kind of a dopamine hit, right? When you're like, aha, I've decoded it. I've done the gematria and found out that the letters in Trump's name spell like benevolent, you know, Christ born again, whatever. I think that is really tantalizing to people, and to feel like they're always making some progress towards some great revelation, I think keeps them in the movement and keeps them doing what they think is, you know, the work.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, I think. So as we're starting to wind down here, you know, you've been doing the rounds with your book, appearing on podcasts like this one, others to talk about it. I've seen you out and about, Kelly, I think on CNN at one point too. Is that right?
Yeah, that was rad. I'd love to, you know, flat smack greater America.
Yeah, well, huge congratulations on the book launch. But I wanted to open up some space because I imagine you've been doing a lot of conversations like these. And I know, at least in my experience, whenever I publish reports like I did earlier this year at my day job, you know, you do a lot of the interviews and you get kind of a lot of the same questions. And I'm sure I've asked you some questions you've gotten before here already. Is there anything that has kind of sat with you? Maybe it's on the cutting room floor of the draft of the book. Maybe it's something that's occurred to you since publication date that you haven't really, I guess, had a chance to talk about, I guess I just want to open up some space here. If you have any sort of parting thoughts about, flat Earth or conspiratorial belief and how it gets popularized and whatnot that you would want to share with listeners today?
That's a good question. You know, I think one thing that's really stuck with me in reporting not just this book, but in other stories on this beat, is how I think important and also difficult it is to give people space to return from a conspiracy belief.
Mm. What do you mean by
because,
that?
Because, well, so many people that I've spoken to, I've spoken to a number of ex-flat earthers, they were very grateful to have a community that supported them when they finally worked their way out of the theory. To not feel completely cast aside and to feel like they had some stable grounding to come back to, which I think is really important. And it occurs to me that that's true of other conspiracy theories too. I think so many conspiracy theorists are sometimes just looking for community, for identity, like we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. And after publishing this book, a couple, like, unverifiable, whatever, Reddit posts came out that I don't know if they're true, but I'll use some conspiracy language. The emotional core of them rings true to me.
And oh, that yeah,
people
there we
were
go.
Saying that
there
they're, yeah, I want to believe. They were saying that they had loved ones who are super into QAnon and that they got out of it by just finding different communities. And they got out of it by getting super into K-pop, which is like a really community-driven thing. Or they got into Wordle and were super obsessed with putting the puzzles together in a way that I think is probably familiar to some QAnon fans. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I think a lot of conspiracy belief, if I'm to speculate, it speaks to emotional needs that are being a little neglected in this day and age in the U.S. You know, I think we're seeing a lot of hollowing out of public life. There are fewer places to build community and to find meaning. And I think in the absence of those things, which are, you know, deeply held human desires, people will go looking for it elsewhere, even if it's in a venue that looks totally batshit, like QAnon. If you didn't have much meaning and you didn't have much community before, even something like that is going to sound really appealing to you. So that's really what I've been sitting with after the publication of this book, is that if people are literally turning to conspiracy theories to meet these, you know, these yearnings, what can we offer instead? And it's something that I'm going to be thinking about for a while.
I've been talking to Kelly Wheel. Her new book is called Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. There will be a link down to where you can find that book in the description of this episode. Kelly, thanks so much for coming on the show this week. And you've been on before, so you know I've got one more question for you. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
Oh, no, I forgot this question. I'm not having a good time on the internet right now. There was a shooting in my city and all kinds of things. Yeah. What's my favorite thing on the internet right now? You know, I think just Britney Spears' joy in finally being able to have another kid. That's really sappy, but I'm very happy for her. Go Britney.
Go Britney. Oh man, I feel like an asshole now.
I thought, yeah, what's your favorite thing on the internet? Oh, it's motherhood?
No. Well, I was like, oh, I know Kelly will remember this question of all the hundreds of podcasts she's done for the book already. No. My favorite thing on the internet this week is jam bands. I got COVID last week and I've been sick as a dog. I'm finally coming out of it now. But been listening to a lot of jam bands and a lot of live streaming TV. I really came to appreciate that in the last few days.
That is the joy of being sick. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Well, listeners, you'll find links down below in the description where to find Kelly, where to find the book. Kelly, thanks again so much for coming on Shitpost this week.
Thanks for having me.